Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Richie Neal, you know, the Supreme Court of the United States, the way I see it somewhat simplistically, is it's got five Republicans in this mini legislature and four people who are more liberal oriented. And in a series of decisions, it's become clearer and clearer that campaign finance becomes a focus of the five Republicans, who keep doing some things that people on the liberal side don't see as being productive. Can you sort of take us through all of this?
Well, I think the history of this issue really dates to Watergate in the modern era, in the sense that in the aftermath of Watergate, an effort was made to embrace public financing for presidential campaigns, coupled with the idea that there would be hard-bound limits on what could be contributed to individual candidates and to political parties. In 1976, that began to change when the Supreme Court embraced what is known as the Buckley versus Vallejo decision. The crux of Buckley versus Vallejo was very simple, and that was that money enabled speech. I will frequently hear people say that the court said money is speech. That's not what they said. They said that money enabled speech. The difficulty here is that it is believed, although the opinion was unsigned, it is believed that the opinion was authored by Justice Brennan, one of the liberal lions of the court. The court also took a number of other interesting positions in Buckley versus Vallejo, one of which was that the government had no compelling interest in leveling the playing field. So it was not up to the government to determine which candidate had how many resources. The other thing that they did was they bought into the idea that you could put a limit on what an individual could contribute to a particular candidate, but you could not put a limit on what any candidate could spend. So what they also said in that ruling was that individuals of great wealth could spend whatever they had the capacity to spend to determine an outcome. I think that Brennan's opinion said that the best way to ensure robust discussion of the issues was to reach as many voters as you possibly can. Now, I've watched a host of reform proposals that have been passed by the Congress here and signed by presidents, but there's really been a steady effort to erode many of these decisions, not the least of which was the court's position in Buckley versus Vallejo, Citizens United, McCutcheon, but a series of other cases along the way. And let's not miss the fact that once President Obama figured out that he was going to be able to raise successfully $1 billion, as Governor Bush had done when he sought the presidency, it really began to fracture the whole idea of public financing of a presidential campaign. So you had in the last campaign Governor Romney spending close to $1 billion, and raising the $1 billion without accepting public financing, and you had President Obama doing the same thing.
They both opted out.
They both opted out. That's the point.
Yeah.
And I think that you're almost impelled in this system today, given the Citizens United decision, when the court said that corporations essentially were people or individuals who were free to associate with what is known as the like-minded in the court's determination, that individuals really could upend the previously held notion that speech really should not be interpreted as one side having more speech because they have more money. Instead, the court said it's up to the individual candidate to reach the widest array of voters.
But liberals of all stripes seem to really think that this Citizens United decision was the worst thing to ever happen. Why is that?
Well, because they essentially said that for the first time in almost 100 years that corporations were free to donate. Heretofore, an individual who ran a corporation would be free to donate from his private wealth or her private wealth. But in this instance, they said that a corporation essentially could begin to write checks the political parties and candidates.
So, but they also said unions, right? So
that's right. Oh no, they have opened the floodgates. Don't get me wrong in that sense at all. But what I think is essential here to understand, and this is why I object to what the court has recently said. The idea of America is really a representative democracy. All kinds of people would serve as a reflection of the will of the notion of popular electioneering. The difficulty with this decision is I think it takes us down the path to a plebiscitary democracy, where wealthy individuals now, usually embracing one issue, conceivably put their might behind that one issue, moving past the boundaries of what once was insulation that political parties provided. And my sense is that as we've opened these floodgates, this torrent of money into the campaign structure, the result has been a dumbing down of democracy, not an enlightenment as the Buckley versus Vallejo underpinning suggested.
So along comes this latest decision. What's that about?
Well, it's the McCutcheon case, and it essentially said that this fellow from Alabama felt that he should not be constrained by the amount of money that he could give in terms of a ceiling, but it was up to him to decide how many different candidates he wanted to support across the country, he might argue, without an artificial barrier put in place.
And how dangerous to your theory of, you know, controlling democracy does the McCutcheon decision become?
Well, the danger, again, is I think that what it essentially says is, coupled with Citizens and coupled with Buckley versus Vallejo, is that if you have more money, you have more speech. I think that's the dangerous part of the argument.
But, Richie, I'm sorry to be cynical about this, but isn't that the way America's run?
Well, I also think that there are plenty of examples where individuals who didn't start out with the most money won the election. And when you consider some of the candidates that have emerged from a place like California who have gone out of their way to spend enormous sums of their own only to discover that they didn't win. But when I look back at what the court determined in saying that an individual who was very wealthy could raise and spend whatever they wanted out of their own pocket, what I think is significant there is that we would never have heard of Ross Perot had he not been prepared to spend the kind of money that he spent out of his own pocket. And I think that that's one of the troublesome parts of this, because all of a sudden, if you're wealthy, you decide that if you want the Keystone Pipeline, that you're going to spend every dime you can against anybody and everybody who's opposed to the pipeline. So it becomes the validation of the single issue candidate on whatever side of the issue that individual comes down, but knowing, again, that there's going to be this huge avalanche of money that is going to either oppose or support your position.
We got 1 minute. So the question now to you is, what's the fix?
Well, I would like to see a voluntary fix. To be very frank, I don't think any presidential aspirants are going back to public financing. I think that that's a foregone conclusion. And there's another part of it I think that bears noting as well. The American taxpayer stopped checking it off on their tax form.
Hmm.
That was another problem. It was always in deficit. It was always running a debt because people decided, I don't want to participate. And the downside of public financing always is that you're compelled to support a candidate that you don't agree with. And I would think that there ought to be voluntary limits. Bill Weld and John Kerry tried that in Massachusetts. It went all right until about the last week of that campaign. But I don't see how a candidate who thinks that he or she can raise a lot more money than their opponent is even going to subscribe to the idea of a voluntary limit.
Richie Neal is...
So until the court addresses the issue of speech and money, I think we're going to be on this road to continued expenditure.
Richie Neal, the congressman from my home district, the Massachusetts 1st District, is above all not only a great congressman, but a great teacher. And we always love having you with us. And when we come back the next time, let's talk some more.
Thank you, Alan.